Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Matt Kelly.
And I'm Matt D'Ancona.
And this is the Two Matts for the week ending Friday, the 3rd of November. Just two normal men. We're just innocent men.
Yes, I don't know about that, but it says that in the script.
An innocent man. What are we going to call this episode?
Well, as you can see from a slightly deranged tone in our voices, we're still recovering from a night on the town seeing Jordan Peterson, and I suppose we should really call this episode A Night with Jordan Peterson.
With Jordan Peterson. Yeah, perfect.
It says what it is.
My alternative would be. But I think that's better. But my alternative would be more direct, which would be, who's the biggest twat, Jordan Peterson or Dominic Cummings?
That is certainly to the point.
But that is the subtext. So
let's go with the come hither. Night with Jordan Peterson.
Let's lure the listeners in.
Enjoy.
Delicately.
Enjoy.
Okay, so this is the Two Matts, episode 20, A Night with Jordan Peterson.
Enjoy.
So, Matt, what are we going to talk about this
week? Well, I think we have to talk about our
mission.
We went out.
We had a big out.
Yeah. Out. Yeah. In fact, we had an operation mission behind enemy lines, basically.
It was one of the weirdest nights of my life.
It certainly was. And I'm sorry, but I'm very glad that you came along in a comradely, bossly way. We went to see Jordan Peterson.
Jordan B. Peterson. What's
his? Jordan B. Peterson.
Jordan B. Peterson.
God damn it.
I did that in Irish.
I know. Who can say why? We're still kind of post-traumatic,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Live at the O2 Arena.
Yeah.
And boy, was it an experience, wasn't it? I think just to sort of give it some context, because lots of people know a bit about Jordan Peterson, but this week has been very specific. It's about the launch of something called the Alliance for Citizens' Responsibility.
Alliance
for a Responsible Citizenship.
That's right, yeah.
Alliance for Responsible Citizenship.
Yeah.
And if Matt, the third Matt, could give us a quick taste of the promo by Jordan Peterson.
You should accept yourself just the way you are. What does that say about who I should become? Is that just now off the table because I'm already good enough in every way? So am I done or something? Get the hell up. Get your act together. Adopt some responsibility. Put your life together. Develop a vision. Unfold all those manifold possibilities that lurk within. Be a force for good in the world, and that'll be the adventure of your life.
So what a crock of shit.
Well, there it is. And the gig we went to, or revivalist meeting, or rally, or whatever you want to call it, I mean, between 15 and 20,000, I gather, were there.
Is that right?
Yes.
It wasn't a sellout, was it?
It was almost a sellout.
I mean, it's kind of blacked out. They put curtains across
a
lot of the back.
But it was extremely well attended.
Yeah.
And it was the capstone of two days of a conference held to launch ARC, which is a sort of brainchild of Jordan Peterson's, and it's not quite clear what its objectives are. But this was him kind of, after 2 days of talks and seminars and things, near the O2, and which had included people like from the government, Michael Gove, Kemi Badenoch,
Jimmy Carr.
Jimmy Carr was there. Who knows why?
Well, someone wrote a piece. Tim Stanley wrote.
Yes, that's
quite
right,
a good
the
piece.
Telegraph.
Actually, it was quite an odd piece in the Telegraph. It was very funny, and he said, you know, it said, "What's Jimmy Carr doing here?" And they said, well, you know, he's a very successful guy who doesn't like paying taxes. He fits right in.
And the Member of Parliament for Gilead, Miriam Cates, talking about falling fertility rates. And she, of course, is co-chair of the New Conservatives, along with Danny Kruger MP, who was also there. And we've talked about the New Conservatives as the sort of the face of the New Conservative Party as MAGA UK. So there were lots of strands coming together. There were also, you know, well-known scholars like Neil Ferguson and a bunch of American politicians, some dialing in. Vivek Ramaswamy, the presidential contender, dialed in. But last night was the sort of, you know, was the big circus event, wasn't it? And we had Jordan Peterson at the start, pacing up and down.
It's just weird. We need to go into this in some
detail.
You
know, and then a panel, which was Douglas Murray, the well-known polemicist, conservative polemicist.
Is he well-known? Can I question that?
Well-known to us. I think if you watch too much telly, which I do, he is, but perhaps not very well-known out.
We'll return to him. So he's getting a book.
Bjorn Lomborg, who has wrote a book in the late 90s called The Skeptical Environmentalist, which gives you an idea of where he's coming from, which is climate change exists, but not to worry, basically. A truly bonkers Christian called Jonathan Pajot, who makes religious art, and more of him anon. And then the guest star at the end was someone who lots of people might not have heard of, some will, Ben Shapiro, who's a massive podcaster in America, runs a big network called The Daily Wire, which has a million subscribers. And he was the kind of the star turn at the end.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of setup. So what did you make of it?
Well, I was left with, I don't know if you remember.
PTSD.
After Donald Trump's inaugural speech, on the steps of the Capitol.
Oh, yes.
The very end of it, George Bush turned to Laura Bush and was lip-read to be saying, boy, that was some crazy shit. and that's how... I was left stunned, right? And so here's the honest thing. I went with a completely open mind, right? I haven't followed the ins and outs of Jordan Peterson and Douglas Murray and all of these guys as forensically as you have. And I thought, well... You know, millions of people worship this guy. I mean, they gave him a standing ovation before he'd said a word.
They do.
And I thought there must be something that I can learn, right? When I'm sitting, I'm going to listen to the guy for 3 hours. I'm going to take something away, right? And what proceeded to unfold was a litany of utter banalities.
Yes.
That not only were they banalities, but they were so banal. They were the banalities banality. Stuff like make yourself a better person.
Be a good dad.
Be a good
husband.
Be the best dad. Who wouldn't want to be a great dad?
Yes.
And this stuff was eliciting cheers and nods and murmurs, ripples.
Yeah.
But so I was struck by how banal it was, how kind of cod religious it was. As you said earlier, it was like a revivalist meeting. When you see on TV of the minister who's about to say, and here's the phone number for donations, folks, it was that, you know, the angry preaching.
Yes.
But again, with no substance whatsoever.
I completely agree. I think that the banality was the bait. It was meant to lull you into a sense that this was just common sense folk talking common sense things, which... with the heavy implication that, and sometimes explicitly stated, that the common sense things have been driven out by evil woke folk, right? And they need to be restated afresh by a new generation. But that was the kind of setup. And, you know, you and I were kind of occasionally exchanging glances and occasionally, you know, brief observations, but that actually beneath the banality, there was a lot going on, some of it quite sinister, some of it hypocritical. So the first sort of premise you kept getting from these guys, starting off with Peterson and then with the panel, was that liberals, woke people elites are obsessed by apocalyptic visions, and that this is a very dangerous thing, because in the view of this gang, there is no need to feel that way. However, at the same time, in a classic example of doublethink, they kept saying that we're in the fight of our lives and facing an existential challenge and we've got to defend civilization. One particularly jagged moment I thought was when Peterson said that if your child isn't, socialized when he's four, he's doomed.
Doomed?
Yeah. Doomed at four.
Wow.
So which is it, I thought? You know, is it scorn or is it urgency or is it actually both?
Yeah.
You know, I'm allowed to say that the end is nigh, but you're not.
Yeah. I mean, it's every pub's got one on a Friday night at 10 o'clock. And the guy who is, he is clever. The guy,
oh,
but
yeah,
he's
yeah,
listened
yeah.
to
no,
himself
very...
for far too long. His vinyl is stuck, and he's impervious to other challenge. And that was one of the other hypocrisies, the great hypocrisies, when they were bemoaning all these people, and they were literally talking about panels on stage about how there was no challenge, that liberals wouldn't be challenged. And you were on stage, you had five middle-aged white men all saying exactly the same thing, all saying, I couldn't agree more. But what scared me a bit, scared's too strong, what worried me, I wasn't scared, but also equally, there were many times during that night when I wanted to openly mock to you what he'd just said and snigger. And I did find myself laughing, but I suppressed the laughter because I was very conscious that around me
there was a
bunch of people, well, 10,000 or more people who were totally bought into this. And I was trying to think, what were they so bought into? Because objectively, it was banal, right? And I once went to, there's a great screenplay writer called Robert McKee.
The story teacher,
book Story. And I went to his three-day seminar. And actually, the style of Peterson is not dissimilar to McKee.
He's a
big, angry preacher, you know, and he's very pompous and serious. McKee's got much more humour than Peterson, which is something we should talk about, the lack of humour.
Zero.
But I asked our mutual friend Tony Parsons, who put me onto this McKee thing. I said, I thought it was fantastic. And he said, the secret about McKee is if you're going there with a project in mind, then everything makes sense. If you just go in there to listen, none of it makes sense. It's just interesting, but there's no great purpose. But if you go there and you're working on a novel, it's absolutely fascinating, and he unlocks lots of things. And I thought all of those people must have had a project in their head. They thought there was something fundamentally wrong, and he was unlocking answers.
Well, I think, the answer to the question you're essentially posing, I think we have to sort of scroll back a bit. Jordan Peterson actually first crossed my radar as long ago as 1999, which sounds crazy. Well, not in any significant way, but I was quite interested at the time in Jungian psychology. And he is a Jungian psychologist. And he wrote a book called Maps of Meaning, came out in 99. I remember getting it, reading it, thinking, that's quite good. You know, Canadian psychologist, it's sort of the whole idea that myth contains lessons for everyday life. Move on. Mm-hmm. And then he reemerges in the run-up to what we might call the Brexit-Trump moment. He starts putting his talks on YouTube in 2013. And before you know it, he's getting into people's heads. And by 2018, he's got 1.8 million subscribers, 65 million views, you know, amazing figures. And what he was doing was, for good or ill, he was responding to an absence of a sense of meaning in people's lives, and particularly skewing to young men. He's a sort of professional version of what the much more unpleasant and wicked Andrew Tate is now doing, you know. But it was a similar sort of initial, that was his initial kind of base.
Yeah.
And then he brought out 12 Rules for Life, the famous book with the Tidier Rome injunction, and another one called Beyond Order in 2021. And he's working on one called We Who Wrestle with God, just coming out next year. But really, his home, his the way he's done this is by essentially short-circuiting traditional media. They've not played a part in his rise. Yeah. And indeed, I've written a bit about what I call network politics. Jordan Peterson is the absolute personification of network politics, because what he does is he understands the way to get power nowadays is not through traditional processes and institutions. It's to make connections. For instance, he instantly saw that Joe Rogan was going to be a star and latched onto him, right, and is a regular on his show. He saw that Ben Shapiro's Daily Wire was going to be a safe and lucrative umbrella for his endless content. If you want to hear a 26-part series about why the Book of Exodus is interesting, and I know you do, it's all there on the Daily Wire website. So he's got that. And this is another network. You know, what ARC is more than anything is a network. So why were they there? They're there because, I think, fraudulently, he is able to present them with a kind of meaning which they feel is lost in their lives.
Yeah.
And he's a very clever adapter to trends. So he came out just at the time that bookshops, you remember bookshops started to have smart thinking sections, right?
Yeah.
His books were all over that. You know, when self-help was starting to become a little bit more muscular, he was there. He's very nimble. He's very good at adapting to the kind of new methods of the moment, and therefore giving people what they think they want.
So yeah, I get that completely. And clearly everybody in that audience was a super fan before they arrived.
Oh, yeah.
No one was there.
Unlike, no one.
You know, you and I were probably unique in being there, you know, convince us. And they'd all read the book. They'd all read the 12 rules, which maybe we should remind some people what some of those rules are in a second. But I was so disappointed in him that, you know, when I've seen him interviewed by people who challenge him, he's very good. You know, and he can be interesting and quirky and funny. But in this forum, where he was just being affirmed by people of lesser intellect, although listening to him, I don't think he's what you would call an intellectual giant. I just think he's a smart guy who can talk quickly and can finish the sentence with a lot of long words, and people go, wow, yeah, that makes sense. You know, I got to the... I that sounds right.
Yes.
There's a great TED talk on I can't remember what the guy is, but it's a guy doing a piss take on TED Talks, basically. And he says, you know, I'm saying nothing, but I'm saying it in a modulated way. And I'm making you interested.
Yeah.
And when I finish, I'll return to the nothing I said, and it'll all seem like it was something, but it wasn't. It was nothing. And this is what he was like, you know. And literally the advice he was giving people was, as we said, tidy your room, start with yourself, tidy your bedroom, be a great father, be an adored father. Who wouldn't want to be an adored father? And if you're an adored father, your kids will love you. They'll become adored fathers. And what it was interesting, it was all about being a great husband, being a great father.
Yes.
There was no mention of being a great wife, mother.
Well,
the structural misogyny of it was incredible. Extraordinary.
Do you remember that moment when he, with sort of good intentions, was telling a story of a patient he'd had who had been, in his view, saintly because she was greatly troubled, greatly damaged, hugely disadvantaged.
Yeah.
And had come to him because she wanted to cut through the bureaucracy. He lives in Canada and practices in Canada to enable people in an institution she'd been a patient at to come out and walk her dog with her. And he took this as an example of saintliness. But he started off by saying she wasn't attractive.
Yeah.
And there was a ripple of laughter in the arena, which was unambiguously cruel.
Yeah, and the way he said it, it's probably what he said, and she was not attractive.
She was not attractive.
And then there was this ripple.
And it was it was a chilling moment because before they all came on, that was the most kitsch, have I got classics for you,
yeah,
dreadful, aren't we all civilised, guitarist playing, you know, bolero.
A lone guitarist.
You know, it was, it. But I mean, the semiotics of it were fantastic. It was, you know, we're all very civilised.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that that is where we start to get to what this is all about, because the dog that didn't bark last night was, who was he really having a go at? And I suppose to a certain extent, he was having a go at us.
Totally.
Because there were some tells, and I know you and I kind of caught some of them at the same time. So, for example, he talked about more than once about the globalist utopian vision. Mm. Now, that is very loaded language. That's Davos, world government, tyranny. It's a dog whistle to conspiracy theorists and wingnuts who think that Bill Gates is trying to turn us into zombies through 5G via nanotech and vaccines. And he said at another point that there's a plot to eradicate nation states. There really isn't. Mm. But that's terribly important. There was endless references to hierarchy and order. You know, their definition of freedom, I think, is quite an attenuated one. Mm. And you don't have to think very hard to work out who'd be at the top of the hierarchy in their imagined society. Absolutely crucial two things. Climate agenda.
Yeah.
That got biffed again and again and again. Yeah. And Peterson has serious form on this. He's talked about the climate con, the pseudo-religion. And it's because they see in people's concern for climate change, which is sanity, a rival agenda. You know, a rival way of seeing and understanding the world. And they want to sow, all of these things are, you know, geared to, it's hysterical, it's a cult, don't buy it. You know, they're trying to take away your ability to lead a normal life. They're trying to impoverish people. What Rishi Sunak said about net zero is not a million miles remote from that in some respects.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the deal. And the other thing that kept cropping up, and I know we both noticed this, was COVID.
Yeah.
He said the tyranny that enveloped us during the COVID crisis. I wrote that down and I thought, okay, so you're going to use these two things to keep your flock in line and hopefully, in your eyes, extend the message to others.
And they were the moments where no one said outright, you know, that Islam's a problem. But, you know, and COVID was a conspiracy and all of these things. But every time you could sense that that was, yes, and the audience was kind of rising, but they never really delivered the, although Douglas Murray looked for the world like he was gagging to, you know, never spewed it out onto the table.
He was twitching with the desire. He'd obviously been told before, tonight is not a war night, Douglas. We're going to be agreeable.
Yeah.
Which
I hated him by the end of that.
I've known him a long while, and he can be enormously engaging in private.
Yeah.
But that's really, I mean, it's funny that one, because it's sort of irrelevant, isn't it? I mean, in terms of what we're discussing, which is the public domain, the public discourse, the fact that he's nice at lunch doesn't really matter.
In fact, the opposite.
It's the opposite. Yeah.
He struck me as a total phony, as an absolute fraudster, and a guy who had been studying Christopher Hitchens on YouTube and was doing a lame impression of him. But he said, I've been reading a lot of Nietzsche lately. And there's this great line in Nietzsche which says, of course, you are right that somebody has destroyed your life, and that person is you. Now, I've seen either Christopher or Peter Hitchens do exactly that same shtick on YouTube recently.
So and it's Hitchens tribute band,
isn't it? It is like the Christopher Hitchens tribute band. And all that guy's got going for him, as far as I can see, is timing. His timing's good, and he drops his lines well, and the audience lap it up, and a effete English accent, which must go down like a gold mine in the States.
Well,
you know,
it's interesting because Douglas Murray essentially reinvented himself. He moved to New York, and his image changed completely. You know, he, as a lot of when Brits go to New York as journalists, they, you know, they have the teeth done, they have the hair done, they get the personal trainer, the wardrobe changes, and he's a very, very slick now. And he's been doing, I know he's been standing in for various people on Fox.
Yeah.
So it's not difficult to work out what his ambition is there. Yeah. And he's been on Rogan at least once, maybe twice. So, you know, his part in the sort of Jordan Peterson universe is the smart Brit,
yeah,
who adds a little bit of grit to the schmaltz. Yeah. And
well, they lapped it. Look, to be fair,
they loved it.
And you know, Peterson introed him as saying, you know, I was speaking to somebody who said they'd much rather be interrogated by Ben Shapiro, who's a famously, you know,
combative and loyally very good. Polite as well, very polite.
Than I would by Douglas Murray. Yeah. And Murray was like, you could feel the absolute kind of, the ego kind of burst out.
Do you really think so?
Like a hate, like an aura. I mean, I thought the guy was a lightweight, to be honest.
I think he would have liked more lines, put it that way, in the script, movie. one of the things that's interesting in all this is that, I think that the big problem they've got is God.
Yes, this was weird. Yeah.
Because you could see, particularly Jonathan Pajot, the French-Canadian icon carver. Sounds so Pythonish, isn't it? The French-Canadian icon carver. And I watched the thing he did for the two-day event. And in it, he kind of said, come on, guys, we've got to talk about God. And this is a problem because in the States, this kind of, you know, wokery, elites, etc., is ruining the West, is glued together by it's all for Jesus. Okay, yeah. Let, you know, do this for Jesus, Matt. You can't do that here. You can biff the woke. You can shout about, do the Matthew Goodwin thing of shouting about elites. You can say that an European is staffed by, you know, communists who want to turn your children into serfs.
Which is true, by the way.
Which, for anyone in listeners, any doubt, if you are listening, is the plan.
That is literally right.
That is why we got you. We don't take subscriptions from people who aren't vaccinated. That's a whole other episode. But joking apart, there is a problem because you can't do that here.
Yeah.
You know, and every time last night when things got to the praise Jesus moment, right?
You couldn't
do that. You can't.
Peterson's a convert, isn't he? After he got really sick.
He got really ill in 2018-19, initially with addiction to sleeping pills, sedatives. And as you do, he went to Russia and Serbia to try and get this cured. I mean, that sort of detail just tells you so much about the man.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's very, very wealthy. So he could have got any Western medicine you can pay for it. But no, he went off to strange clinics in Russia and Eastern Europe too. Yeah. And then he came back and he's got God and also some very strange suits.
Weird suits. I was staring at it all night. So for Felicity, it was double-breasted suit, not particularly well cut. But half of it was a kind of burgundy red and the other half was a sort of like a deep blue. And then I woke up this morning, I thought, it's Barcelona's football kit, what he was wearing.
Or Two-Face from Batman.
Yes. I mean,
and I think there is a little part of him that wants to be seen as the dandy and the trickster, which is tricky when you have zero sense of humour, really.
Yeah. When we come back, I want to broaden this out a bit.
Yeah.
And also reflect about some of the things that we've seen in the COVID inquiry this week.
Definitely.
Which must be mentioned. Stay with us a little bit more on this fascinating topic when we come back after the break. This week's episode is sponsored by The New European, and boy oh boy, do we have a seasonal gift for you if you subscribe.
What's that, Santa?
It is. And I shouldn't be laughing, but it's an absolutely
deadly serious.
It's a fantastically funny set of six Christmas cards and a 2024 wall calendar.
also seriously funny. Yeah, you know, I'll be bound.
But they are bloody funny.
Bloody funny.
I even wrote some of the gags myself.
Well, then it's a lock.
It is an absolute lock-in. And you can get those six cards and your fantastic wall calendar to give you laughs all the way through 2024. And to make all of your friends think you are the funniest person on the block when they get your Christmas card, if you subscribe to the New European. And the New European, if you don't know, is a fantastic newspaper and website full of great serious political analysis from great writers like the very fantastic Matthew D'Ancona. Do you know him?
Seen here.
Relative?
Yeah, very cousin, I think.
Patience Wheatcroft. Bonnie Greer,
James Ball,
Tannikoff, Jonty Bloom, Will Self, absolute stellar stuff.
And
Alistair Campbell's Diary is an absolute.
It's a must.
It's an absolute must read. And it's also got loads of fantastic cultural commentary and features, stuff, left field stuff you won't read anywhere else. But if you love Europe and you want to get a sense of why Europe is a fantastic continent and a great place we all love, then the New European was literally made for you. So subscribe and join our fight against right-wing nationalistic media and do something positive about the state of the press in the UK.
Yes, sir.
You can get everything we do online for just £1 a week. Or if you like the actual newspaper delivered to your door every single week, then you can have that for another £1. And that's a 75% saving on what you'd pay at the newsagent. Just go to www.theneweuropean.co.uk/2Matts. That's www.theneweuropean.co.uk/2Matts, #2 MATTS. Do it now and you'll get your Christmas cards and calendar in plenty of time for the festive season, and you'll be supporting great independent journalism. Thank you.
On the Media Podcast this week, Boris Johnson heads to GB News. Our pundits ponder what we should expect from the disgraced PM. Also on the programme, the media bill is back, but what's changed will tell you all you need to know. All that plus the story of a new radio service for Gaza. That's the Media Podcast with me, Matt Deegan. There's a link in your show notes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, so Matt, the individuals concerned are well worth pillorying at great length, and I hope we've done a bit of that in the first half. But there are it is a there's a macro picture here.
Yes, there is.
And the more you look at it, the wider it gets, and the more things get roped into it. New technologies and how our attitudes towards society. What do you think it all adds up to?
I think what's happened, I mean, I mentioned in the first half my sort of fascination with network politics replacing old-fashioned institutional politics. And I think that that is the really important bit, which is these guys all started off, they were called the intellectual dark web.
Yeah.
various people are, it's attributed to various people, that phrase, but, you know, it's people like Sam Harris and Bill Mayer and Douglas Murray and Jordan Peterson himself and Joe Rogan and Dave Rubin and Ben Shapiro. All these people were, you know, they were on the web and they were outside the norm, right? And initially they had the kind of maverick appeal, but now really they are super, super powerful. I mean, Joe Rogan's show in the States is by far the most powerful program media product in the world by miles.
Yeah, and I think it's number two or three in the charts here as well.
Yes, I mean it's the hardest one to get onto. Yeah. So, you know, this week Rishi Sunak is hosting as part of his AI summit is hosting Elon Musk.
Yeah,
chat show host / prime minister meets billionaire tech guru. At number 10, it's a slightly demeaning thing. But the interesting thing is that I bet you we're recording this on Thursday, so we haven't seen the Sunak-Musk encounter. But I bet you it's an hour long, right?
Yeah.
Musk did Rogan this week, Joe Rogan's show, and gave him nearly 3 hours.
Yeah.
Now that tells you...
There's your proportion.
It also tells you where power lies.
Yeah.
Because as far as Musk is concerned, he's got this new cyber truck he's selling and various other things. And of course, his message on AI, which is we should be very worried about it. And in order to get his message out, he gives the British Prime Minister around about an hour. And Joe Rogan, who is a mixed martial arts commentator and stand-up comedian, but also a podcaster of huge power... 3 hours.
Of course. And you said slightly demeaning. I think it's like incredibly demeaning.
It is incredibly demeaning.
The British Prime Minister, right, interviewing a tech billionaire in a way, and like it hasn't happened yet, so I don't know what, but you can bet your bottom dollar, Rishi Sunak's not going to be telling Elon Musk anything he doesn't know. It'll all be, oh, Elon, you know, what do we do here? How do we save this? You know, how can we progress these issues? All right. This small person who happens to inhabit the role of Prime Minister right now, this obsequious kind of narcissistic wannabe Silicon Valley guy, you know, he literally wants to live in Silicon Valley. Elon Musk represents God to him, basically, I think. And we were saying before, you know, before the show, you can imagine them high-fiving in, you know, oh, what a great get, as though they're bookers on a talent show. You know,
I can certainly imagine... what you mean? The
Sunak and...
Sunak's team. Yeah, oh, well, they are. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't know whether they've literally high-fived, but they've been talking about it as a get.
Yeah.
You know, as if they were working for Letterman, David Letterman or Graham Norton or someone.
Exactly. And so it is completely demeaning of The Office, I think, that Sunak's doing this. But it says a lot about the real power and where influence lies in the world, where you've got someone like Elon Musk, unelected, you know, enormously wealthy, but influential in specific areas, but being treated as a prophet, you know, as some kind of Old Testament kind of figure that has to be adored and who has to be
placated.
And you saw it over in the States as well, yes, where they talk, you know, about his attitude to Russia and Ukraine and his Starlink network. And, you know, I must be honest, there are times when I wonder, have I got this completely wrong?
No.
Am I the one that is...
No,
is the idiot blowing in the wind?
No. You know? I mean, the problem is that the technological revolution is so, A, fast, and B, exponentially changing... There's always change, okay? That's not new. But change has changed in the sense that in our time, change is happening at a rate that we find dizzyingly hard to keep up with. And it's at a time when attention spans, because of the technological revolution, are shorter than they were, and political cycles are much shorter than they were. So the capacity of politicians to keep up with this is very limited. Now, there's a neat segue there into the COVID inquiry, because one of the things that has emerged from the COVID inquiry, and of course, you know, it lit up this week, didn't it? Because we had Dominic Cummings, you know, another showbiz character, really.
Yeah.
And his sort of profane WhatsApp messages at the COVID inquiry. And what came out of it, more than anything, there were so many things that came out of it, it's fascinating, is that this was a government that had absolutely zero pandemic resilience.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying that it should have been specifically and 100% ready for a coronavirus of the deadliness of COVID-19. Okay. Mm. But the more we hear,
that's disgusting.
It's amazing.
It's I saw somebody tweet that, you know, it was just some random tweet guy saying Matt Hancock should be done for manslaughter. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you're absolutely right, mate. It should be a crime for that, you know, especially when you're in office, for that level of incompetence and absolute disregard for people's lives, and where everything was just about how did you perform in a press conference and how did you field questions, and the lying, the absolute lying, the non-stop lying, not just to us, but within them, yes, to themselves, the absolute kind of cyclone of lies, disregard and arrogance that resulted in thousands of people dying. I do not know what civilization wouldn't put a guy like that on trial and throw away the key. I really don't know.
It's the logical end of all this is people being charged. Now, I'm afraid I'm cynical enough to not have a huge amount of confidence that people will end up being, you know, prosecuted. Is there already a case for that? Absolutely, right? Mm. And the interesting thing about it all is that the world that is being described in these hearings, and there's a lot of whinging from the sidelines from the Tories about, oh, it's all being turned into a sort of personal thing. You know, it's a personal attack on Boris. It's a personal attack on Matt Hancock. It's a personal attack on Dom Cummings. Damn right it is.
Damn right, yeah.
You know, of course it is, because the system that they had not only inherited but had radically enhanced was very, very much based upon cults of personality and clusters of personal power. Yeah. And the problem is that there was a terrible convergence between this sort of gang of narcissists, each with their own little empires and, you know, agendas, and technology. Because we discussed this on the last Q&A, WhatsApp is unbelievably useful. It really is. But it is also an insufficient means of governing well, to at the very least. And clearly, you know, you have to read some of the WhatsApp messages that were being quoted in the hearings. It's a bloody awful means of governing, because it lends itself to Dominic Cummings calling people the C word and misogynistic rants and ministers are fuck pigs and all this kind of explosive informality, which is offensive in and of itself. But it's also not a good way to make decisions.
No, also there's something, because it can be an intimate exchange. I thought it was fascinating, the exchanges between Simon Case, the cabinet secretary,
yes,
and Cummings, where they were both talking about how crap Boris Johnson is, and you know, he's a trolley and we can't govern like this and so on and so forth. And I thought, you know, he's the cabinet secretary. He's got an important job to do, and that is to keep the government on track. Fair enough. But also, he is talking about the prime minister. Mm. And once you lose respect, that's what I'm trying to say, is on WhatsApp, on Twitter, they're impulsive platforms. And it's so easy to lose the moment, lose respect.
Yes.
But that loss of respect doesn't just exist on that platform. It then extends out into the real world. And it's all part of the problem. The misogyny, the swearing, the aggressive nature of the way that those guys were doing business on WhatsApp was also translated into the real world.
And the problem was that, you know, a lot of the time Cummings was right about Johnson.
Yeah, totally.
Because, you know, Johnson is a person who is completely unsuited to being prime minister.
Yeah, but that fucker, right? That fucker, Dominic Cummings, knew that.
Yes.
Right? And every time that fucker talks and prattles on and bores everybody about how great Tolstoy was and all of this, and, you know, is Anna Karenina better than War and Peace and all of this shit, let's not forget,
discuss,
that guy knew what Johnson was, yes, when he helped get him elected.
And he said so. I mean, the barefacedness of it is extraordinary, which is, he described it to I think it was Hugo Keith, who was still...
he's the KC, the barrister.
The barrister. There have been various lawyers, but I think it was still Keith. Said, Yeah, you know, we were taking a huge punt, but we had to because we had to get Brexit done and we had to stop Corbyn. Well, you know, how do you sleep at night, mate? And then we know from Cummings's subsequent interview with Laura Kunzberg, which I still think is one of the most amazing political interviews I've ever seen to this day, where he says in terms that a few days after the 2019 election, he, Cummings, and his Vote Leave cabal were plotting to bring down the Prime Minister whose election they'd just secured with a big majority. Now, that is coup talk.
Yeah.
You've just, for better or for worse, you've just managed to get Johnson into number 10 with his own massive mandate. You've destroyed the Labour Party. You know, the wheels of democracy, it may not be what you want, but they've worked. The system has worked. And within days, and he used that phrase to Laura Kunzberg, within days, he and his pals, unnamed, but we can have a good guess, were talking about how do we get rid of him.
Yeah.
Now, that level of kind of anti-democratic entitlement is terrifying.
And he still in his own head occupies moral high ground.
Yes, and he's talking about setting up a new party, which actually pleases me because for all sorts of odd cultural reasons, that doesn't seem to fly in this country.
Yeah.
You know, you have to occupy the existing parties.
Yeah.
You colonise them, as Johnson had the Tory party and Blair did the Labour party. But still, you know, he's taken far too seriously SW1.
I think that's the threat. And I should apologise for my language to listeners, but I am angry. I'm really angry about this. And his line of defence on Twitter right now seems to be, oh, what's worse, me telling the truth about these people or the fact that those people were lying C-words and all of this business? It's not a zero-sum game. You can both be culpable of a great crime against the state and against the people. And I think they are all guilty of a crime. A crime. I really do think it's a crime against the people. And it resulted in thousands of people dying.
But he's very good, and we should call him out for this more often than we do, at hopping from one foot to the other. So some of the time he's Mr. Genius, who is the engine room of government. And other times he's standing back saying, you know, it nothing to do with me. They're all morons. I tried, you know, but the Cabinet Office is just completely dysfunctional, or the Department of Health is a bin fire, or whatever it may be. Yeah. Now, which is it, Dom? You know, were you in fact running Britain, or were you tearing your hair out because you weren't able to?
And this is a common thread between Jordan Peterson and Dominic Cummings and the rest of them. Explicitly, Jordan Peterson was the whole point of last night, Wednesday night at the O2, was we're going to talk about answers. You know, we're going to come up with answers and solutions. And there was none of that. There were no solutions at all. There was just long prattle with allusions to philosophers and biblical figures and all this kind of cod philosophy and cod science. And it was all, look how clever I am, right? And the same with Dominic Cummings. You know, it's like the prefix to his evidence, quotes from Tolstoy, quotes from here, quotes from this. It's like, look how clever I am. And I would just encourage people to say, you know, listen to all of this stuff and then ask yourself, after you've listened to it, what can you remember that actually meant anything, that added up to anything? And from Jordan Peterson, all I can remember is a guy saying, be a great dad and tidy up your bedroom and look after yourself and everything else will emanate from that. All I can remember from Dominic Cummings is they're all fucking useless.
Yes.
They were all fucking useless and I was right. And that's all I can remember. And that's nothing, you know?
It doesn't get us anywhere.
Ugh.
No, I think the inquiry has caught light this week.
Oh, 100%.
The interesting thing is whether people will retain an interest in it.
Well, it's got the big salvo to come, which is when the politicians come in December.
When I think it's going to be Johnson December, and Hancock it? And people like that come.
Yeah. Well, we've got a wicked front page for the week after next.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, which I've got in my head, and it's going to put, I think, visually Boris Johnson into his correct context.
I can only imagine how exciting.
Well, listen, on that bombshell, let's...
on that teaser...
I've got to stop saying on that bombshell.
No, actually, you know what it is? It's like the mid-credits teaser trailer, isn't it? It's like, you know, coming in Avengers 14.
It is, and we'll revisit it, because maybe we can do a special... I mean, one of the sort of... We should just consign these people to the dustbin, but you can't help yourself but to come back and rake over the coals with these
guys. Part of consigning them to the dustbin... I mean, it is like medieval Italian city-states where they'd occasionally exhume the corpse and drag it around the public square. And I think that, you know, without actually killing anyone, we should keep that practice in mind
let's not close off any avenues. All right, listen, I hope you've enjoyed the show, folks, as depressing as it can be sometimes, but we have to vent now and again.
Yes, and also don't forget, you know, we're not 24 hours out of having been listening to Jordan Peterson, right?
We're suffering.
And it probably shows.
Yeah, we'll be all right after the weekend. And of course, we'll have some lighter conversation on Sunday with our now regular Q&A episode.
Our regular Q&A.
People are enjoying. So get your questions in and any feedback to the two mats at tnepublishing.com. That's the two mats, number two, M-A-T-T-S, at tnepublishing.com. And don't forget our new special deal, free Christmas cards and a 2024 calendar when you subscribe to The New European. There is a link in the show notes. Thanks as ever to our producer, the third Matt, Matt Hill at Rethink Audio, assisted by Maya Siedlund and Ollie Peart. And until next week,
it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.